First-time author James Whitfield Thompson is 68, and his new novel has raving blurbs from André Dubuis III, Margot Livesey, Jodi Picoult, which is interesting enough. But as we reach the end of his book, we see he's based it on a real-life story he discovered on the pages of the Boston Globe in the late 1990s about a man who'd been arrested for kidnapping his own children years earlier. Like the characters in James Whitfield Thompson's story, you read the real story on the pages of the newspaper and veer from support for the father to horror that he could have done such a thing to his children and to their bereft mother. James Whitfield Thompson's book is Lies You Wanted to Hear. He joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us about the case you saw in the pages of the Boston Globe.
Well, the story broke in April of 1998, and I was captivated by the story. He seemed like a very, very good father, but less than a desirable human being otherwise.
Well, let's explain to people. His name was Stephen Fagan. He had changed it to Bill Martin. Like your characters, he told the children that their mother was dead.
Yes.
And he said that he had to take them because they were endangered. Now, when you read the first stories, it's interesting. It's just like in your book. When you read the first newspaper accounts, here was this Harvard professor who says he gave up his career for the sake of his children. And then you go further and it's, well, he was really a $12,000 a year advisor to a legal department at
yes.
Harvard, not really a professor. And he might have stolen some paintings. And she was not the alcoholic that he said she was. Judges found that she had narcolepsy.
Yes, though the neighbors did say that she had left the children alone several times. This is, of course, when she had fallen asleep because of the narcolepsy. But she was turned out to be quite an accomplished woman after the children left. She went on and got a PhD, became a medical researcher, and quite an interesting woman. I would love to interview her at some point to find out what happened after the story was over.
Yeah, but instead, you, over several years, you let this marinate and then decided to write about it, to fictionalize a case like it. Why? What compelled you?
I just thought the idea was very, very interesting. I knew that I didn't really want to write about the real characters. I just wanted to write about someone who felt that he was compelled to do what Stephen Howard Fagan had done.
Yeah, take his children.
Take his children, yes.
Well, over the course of the writing, you seem to have done research because you start quoting stats about how often this happens, and it's astonishing.
Yes, it is astonishing. I mean, there are about 200,000 what they call familial kidnappings a year, and more than twice the number of children taken are taken by their fathers than are taken by their mothers, about 53% from fathers, 25% from mothers, and the rest from other family members.
In reading your book, I think I can tell, but where do you fall on your thoughts about this? We can see what researchers say, but what were you trying to say or find out through your characters?
What I was trying to find out is what could make a good man do such a terrible thing? What would drive someone whom I felt was a good human being to do something so incredibly terrible? Because taking your children away from their mother seems to me to be pretty far out there. And the story didn't interest me if either the mother or the father were a monster. If the father took the children because the mother was abusive and he couldn't get any redress through the courts, then he was just doing what he had to do in order to save his children. And if he took them just because he was just a horrible person who was angry and wanted to spite her, then that story didn't interest me. And I wanted to try to find that balance of how two people who were once so in love could then turn around and reach this point.
Well, you do it through the ultimate he said, she said. Each gets a chapter, one after
yes.
the other. And we bop back and forth like a tennis ball or like a child in a custody battle, the reader does. You find yourself listening to the father and thinking, you know, he's right. Your wife's mother was picked up for drunk driving. That's really a threat to your children. And then it swings back again. You hear that, wait a minute, he was a cop, and the mother tells you that the kids once found his gun, which was left loose, and you swing back. Was that your goal to
Yes, very much. I jokingly told my editor that my goal was to start fistfights in book clubs. And I knew I'd sort of reached it when I gave the book in a draft form to one of my closest friends and his wife. And she said, I love this book, Jim. but I hate that guy. And he said exactly the opposite. And I realized, I've got it. And that's the praise that I've gotten so far for the novels tends to center on that, the way you keep going back and forth in your sympathies between the two.
Well, and you imagine how judges feel. In the real-life case that inspired this, the father made accusations against the mother. A court stepped in, social workers stepped in. They didn't find it to any of it
right.
to be true. We know that sometimes they can overlook it. But also, we see at the end of your book that you consulted with local police here to find out about the laws regarding child kidnapping. I was astonished to read in some of the Globe accounts that decades ago there weren't any.
Exactly. In fact, there are some states today where there still are no laws against parental kidnapping. And when in my novel, Lucy, my main character, goes to the police and she wants them to come and help her, and the police say, "I'm sorry, we don't have the resources for it." That's true.
We saw that in the accounts of the real life story.
Exactly.
That
it,
the mother had gone to the authorities and they said there's no law. Now there would be one, ultimately.
There would be, but the problem comes into jurisdiction. If someone is kidnapped in Boston today and the person's on the run, the Boston police are not going to send people going all across the country trying to find this missing individual. They don't have the resources for that.
Well, you give your characters a happier ending in some ways. A mother does get to, let's say, just have some relations, whereas in the real-life story, the daughters were so firmly, in,
yes.
you know, 20 years of being told that your mother was a monster, they believed their father. And I'm wondering if part of that is a natural outcome of it being, yours being a more modern story, because nowadays, kids have computers. When you tell a child a story about a mother dying in an accident, they might someday go look to see.
Well, I think that that's true. I think also the mother would have the resources to go on Facebook, to go on the social media and say, "My children have been taken. Here are their pictures," to publicize that in a way that wasn't possible in the early 1980s.
Given how much this really, really does happen, did you ever have in the back of your mind a hope that maybe an abducted child picks up a book, an adult now, or an abductor picks up your book?
I don't think I've gone that far. I did receive recently a fan letter from a woman whose children had been taken, and she said I nailed it. And that was the most, for me, emotionally moving letter that I've gotten so far, to have someone who has lived through it say that I basically got it right. But most important is I'm trying to tell a story and get people to think about the decisions that people make. What would you do if you were in their place? In this particular case, my character, Matt, feels that he crosses the Rubicon. He can't go back. And when he tells his children that their mother is dead, he feels that he cannot unsay those words, and so he goes forward. Perhaps in long, long hindsight, he might feel that that was incorrect, but he can't do that in the course of his flight.
James Whitfield Thompson's new novel is Lies You Wanted to Hear. It's based loosely, or inspired rather, by a real-life story of a man who abducted his children here in the Boston area. Jim, congratulations and thanks.
Thank you very much.
And by the way, in that real-life story of Stephen Fagan, who abducted his daughters for 20 years, he pled guilty to kidnapping, received a suspended sentence, and did community service. At the time, his daughters stood by him and refused to meet their mother. From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from the Institute of Contemporary Art, presenting Bill T. Jones in Storytime, a new dance work inspired by John Cage, February 21st through 23rd, icaboston.org.